our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914. If you'd like to get on the air today, you can give us a call here at the studio at 457-1290. It's 457-1290. We have a couple of major issues that we want to discuss today. First being today, the law enforcement community laid to rest the body of Brian Dooley, who was killed in the line of duty this past week down in Warren County. And we want to extend our heartfelt condolences to the Dooley family and the law enforcement community and the rest of the southwestern Ohio community who in some way, shape, or form was involved and touched by this incident. And it just kind of brings to the fore, being in law enforcement for 25 years, the ever-present dangers that we face, both intentional and accidental, in carrying out our mission. And he paid the ultimate sacrifice in doing the job that he loved so much. And I'm sure the news reports are accurate, the accounts are accurate. He was an instrumental member of the community. He'd been promoted to sergeant. Obviously, he was a highly regarded member of that sheriff's department, and he's going to be sadly missed. And again, we just want to extend our condolences to the family and the rest of the law enforcement community, and we ask that our listeners just kind of keep him and his family in their prayers during this tough time. And but for that matter, this is the end of National Law Enforcement Officer Week, which is an annual event where they have activities out in Washington, D.C., commemorating the loss of life of law enforcement officers who have paid the ultimate sacrifice around the country over the years. And it's a difficult time for law enforcement, because you reflect on those that you know or those that you knew and their families, and you gather together and you pull each other together, and that's what we do. We are a brotherhood, sisterhood organization, and times like this, it's tough, but we move on, because we all know that when we swear the oath, we swear to protect lives and property, and one of the inherent aspects of the life is the ever-present element of danger, and we just ask that you keep that, keep those things in the back of your mind, and if you have the opportunity to talk with a law enforcement officer, let them know how much you appreciate what they do. The other thing I want to talk about is this last week, the passage of the two Senate bills that or the House bills that were relevant to concealed carry. We'd been talking about that for weeks leading up to this past week, and I'm going to let Mark kind of give you a lowdown on how things went. It was just a good thing that we've evolved to this point. I know there was some concern over some of the last-minute, quote, obstacles, unquote, that might have been thrown up, but it passed anyway. And Mark, why don't you just give them the lowdown on how things went?
Well, it passed actually pretty significantly and with a fairly decent margin. There was some concern that there may not even be enough people voting for it that to even have the vote, because they were concerned it might not even pass at all. It passed 56-40. That was on Wednesday afternoon. I was watching it actually online from the live stream from the House floor, and it was interesting to hear the arguments on both sides. It was interesting to hear the opponents and some of the arguments they made. For the most part, those arguments either were misinformed, completely emotional, and had no logical or data to back them up, or they were outright lies. And that just really pains me to see that our legislators would do that. They would take a story that they either have to know to be untrue, or that they simply refuse to check because the story is too good. And then they make statements from the floor of the House on the official record that are completely specious, that are absolutely no relevance to the facts whatsoever. Fortunately, those arguments did not win the day, and both of those bills passed. Now, the first bill was HB 54, which was the Restoration of Rights Act. And what that does is it aligns Ohio law with federal law for restoration of your right to keep and bear arms. When certain things have occurred and you have lost your right to own and possess or carry a firearm, it is possible to get those rights restored after certain things occur. Unfortunately, there was a ruling that said that you have to restore all the rights, or they don't. The federal does not recognize that any of them have been restored. And there was one little caveat in the Ohio restoration. That caveat has now been removed. It really was not an important caveat. It's the concept of dangerous ordinance. And although it would be important if it was possible to get those things, there is such a different restriction process on that, that the fact that somebody is not going to be able to get those isn't going to be based on the fact that the rights had not been restored. So they've now aligned those two, or at least that's what that bill would do, is to align the state law with the federal, and then people who get their rights restored will actually have that recognized, and they will be able to purchase a gun just the way was intended when they get their rights restored. That bill actually passed with a fairly substantial majority. That was not really one that was considered controversial. The other bill, and the bill that was considered second, was House Bill 45, and that's the restaurant and car carry rules fix. That was really two pieces that are together, both related to concealed carry. One would change and actually remove the restrictions on how a licensed individual would be able to carry in a motor vehicle. Right now, there's only four ways that you can carry: in a holster on your person, in a console or glove box that is closed, in a closed case that closes with a zipper, snap, buckle, or lid, some other type of closure, and that case is in plain sight, or in a locked case, and that case does not have to be in plain sight. Those are the only ways that you can carry. So if you're someone that wants to mount a holster in your vehicle and put a firearm in the holster while it's in the vehicle, and then put it back on your person where it's concealed when you leave the vehicle, that would not be a legal way to carry a firearm in the vehicle right now. Or some people want to carry in a pocket, and they carry without a holster, which, of course, we've talked about many times. We don't recommend that, but we understand how people do that. Right now, you can't carry in a pocket without a holster and be legal in a motor vehicle. So all of those restrictions would go away. There really wasn't much in the way of opposition to those changes. The other change, though, was to allow people with a license to carry a concealed handgun to carry in a restaurant that serves alcohol. That one is what generated all the emotional response. The whole argument that people have been making is we don't need guns in bars. And frankly, that's not what this is about. They say guns and alcohol don't mix. And frankly, that's not what this was about. There's already a restriction in the law, the way it was originally drafted, and by the way, the way it was passed last year, both out of the House committees and by the Senate, there is no consumption of liquor allowed when you are carrying pursuant to your license and you go into a place that sells alcohol for consumption on premises. That was a specious argument completely, and the whole concept that, well, just your very presence there is going to cause a problem, there's no foundation for that whatsoever. We have 42 other states in this country that already have some means for citizens who are legally allowed to carry a firearm to carry that firearm into a place that serves alcohol, whether it be a restaurant that serves alcohol as part of their food business or even a bar. Now, some states restrict based on the percentage, and we talked about that a little bit a couple of weeks ago, based on the percentage of revenue that the restaurant or the bar generates from alcohol sales versus food sales, and some places have restrictions on that, and that is not part of the Ohio law. It's also not part of many of the other laws, but the way Ohio law was written, there was no way that you could carry into a restaurant and leave the gun in its holster, even if you were not consuming at all. This bill would change that. Now, we're not quite there yet, because there were two bills in each of the chambers of the state legislature. There were there was a Senate versions of the bill, and there were House versions of the bills that basically were the same. There was one amendment to the Senate version of one of the bills that will have to be resolved, and whether that gets added to the House bill and then the Senate passes the House version, or the House passes the Senate version, whichever way that happens, one of those two bills for each of the two issues will need to be passed by the other chamber and then sent to the governor for signature. Now, the governor has said he's going to sign these bills, so there has been some question about that. There's been some concern about that. I know during the election, there were a whole lot of statements about whether or not Governor Kasich is a solid pro-gun as much as he says, based on some of his voting history, both in the House when he was there before and some of the other statements that he's made. So there was some concern about that, and he has said that he is indeed going to sign these bills when they get to his desk, and And I guess that will be the next litmus test to find out what happens.
Yeah, and I think more than pro-gun, it's going to come down to pro-Second Amendment. And I know that sometimes those get run together, but I think this is a basic core issue that strikes at the heart of the Second Amendment, and I think that's where we need to focus our energy. A couple other issues that came up, I know, or that come up when you discuss the passage of those two bills is who's going to check, and this whole concept of alcohol versus food only. I'm glad the Ohio legislature didn't get into that breakdown, because that could have been just very cumbersome to interpret. And as the chief of police we had on as a guest last week mentioned, other states have tried it, but that's just a difficult avenue to walk down. The other issue about who's going to check, my argument is they don't need to check because the law-abiding citizens will obey the law, just as the law-abiding citizens have refrained from carrying their guns into establishments right now that have had the signs up and have restricted them from going onto the premises. And Mark, I know we talked about this week, this past week, those restaurants are still going to be able, under the current law, to post those signs, and there will be similar restrictions on individuals. However, I think that the voice of the people was loud and clear in this particular vote, and now I would hope that the restaurant owners and managers understand that that's the way the law is, and the intent of the law is to allow law-abiding citizens to provide themselves with a measure of protection by carrying their firearms to come and visit their establishments. And I hope the next logical course is that the restaurant owners and managers just acknowledge that and realize that's just the way business is going to be from this point forward.
Last week during the show, I put up a couple of links to some posters that I would strongly encourage restaurant owners to download, print, and post on the doors, the entrance doors to their facility. Now, these bills are not yet in effect. There's obviously restaurant carry is not yet legal, but it is apparently going to pass, and it will go to the governor for signature. And at that point, 90 days later, law-abiding citizens will have the option of carrying into a restaurant. There's the Ohio Restaurant Association has fought against this, and my guess is that there's going to be a big push to get restaurants to put up no weapon signs on their doors. What I'd like to do is to have restaurant owners get in front of that and put up signs that say, we support restaurant carry, not yet, but soon. When passed and in effect, lawful concealed carry is welcome here. That would tell the gun owning community that it's only the state restriction that's keeping people out, not your own preference. And if you're one of those who recognizes the right to keep and bear arms, and you'd like to have the most responsible citizens in our community as part of your customer base, I'd recommend you go out to our website at sim-trainer.com/radio and download either the 8.5x11 size or the 11x17 size. Print those out and put them up on your doors. We need to take a break here, so when we come back, we'll go out and talk to the phones. Lynn in Fairborn has called in, and if you'd like to call in, give us a call at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number into the studio, and we will be back in just a few minutes. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to the show, and as an additional comment reference Mark's last statement there, I want to also encourage our listeners to engage in, I'll call it just informative dialogue with any restaurant owners or managers that you know and talk to them about the concerns you have and the real issues surrounding this whole concept of restaurant carry. Now, I know that with some of the large chains, you're probably not going to have much success because those decisions are made at corporate. However, I think if the information trickles down that they've had a significant number of people bring it to their attention and you're money-toting customers who are going to contribute to the economic stability of those restaurants. So I got to believe that your money's going to, if your voice doesn't say much, your money's going to speak very loudly and just indicate to them that you're going to take your business elsewhere if they don't support this because of the related issues. And a lot of it's the information. I will tell you that even as a law enforcement officer, I've found that educating people about the real issues is critical, and I think a lot of it goes, as Mark mentioned earlier, due to the fact that there's a lot of people out there that are spouting inaccurate information that's just generally taken as accurate, and then that's what they base their opinions on, whereas if you give them accurate information about real-world situations and real-world concerns, That's got to have some weight to it.
And I think that's where we did not get in front of that in the education realm when concealed carry first passed back in 2004, and then we had a whole lot of catch-up to do. So gun owners, this is your opportunity to get in front of that bow wave and get in front of the antis before they start spouting the rest of their information. Let's go out to the phone and talk to Lynn in Fairborn, who's got a question for us. Lynn, welcome to the Shooting from the Hip.
Thank you, sir. I'm a local pastor of a small church, under 100 members attended, rather. And I already had one person come to your place to get a first shot, and then I have several ushers that I want to start on the 13th of June. I believe that's your next concealed.
That's correct.
I wanted you to kind of explore with me, if you will, some of the, if you have any customized training with church-related security. I get a lot of pastoral letters, newsletters, and it's amazing that it'll talk about, church shootings and people getting shot in church and things like that. So that's just been a concern of mine. So if you could just kind of explore with me, if you will, some of the things we should look for and then even the legality that's involved.
Yeah, I'll be more than glad to do that. First of all, let me just... in a brief sense, mention the legality is it's going to be up to you if you'll give the people that are trained the permission to carry a firearm during the services and act in a security capacity. The second point is we do very customized training, and we've done it with several churches in the Dayton area, and it's been very successful. And I'll talk a little bit now, and then I'll talk a little more after the first break here that we're going to have to go to. But in a very general sense, we do customizable training and get people to a minimum level of competency where we would feel, and ultimately you will feel, that those people will be ready, willing, and capable to handle situations as they present themselves. And we carry that all the way from verbal de-escalation of potentially violent situations all the way through to the ultimate use of deadly force if necessary. So we look at the more holistic approach to the problem. We talk about those issues. We give them examples. And when we come back after the break, we'll go ahead and talk about that.
Yes.
Lynn, can you stay with us through the break?
Sir.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks very much. We're going to go out to the news center now with Bill Scheidel and find out what's going on in the area. Get a little bit of an update, and then we will be back with your calls at 457-1290. Give us a call. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to the show. And right before the break, we were talking with Lynn about some of the protocols or some of the training that we offer at SimTrainer relevant to preparing members of church congregations to... Are you still there, Lynn?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to mention a couple things about what we do at SimTrainer to help members of the church congregation to prepare themselves to be part of a security team. And I want to emphasize to the listeners and to you that we do, in fact, take a holistic approach. And teaching people to shoot is actually the easiest thing that we do down there relevant to this. And some people look at
I'll
me and say...
for that.
Yeah. And some people say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, people that have been through our training know that the methods we use and the techniques that we use and the practice that we encourage and ultimately the practice that our people engage in gets them to a high level of efficiency in a very short period of time. The tougher road to toe is when we have to talk about verbal de-escalation and mental preparation for confrontation. The mental preparation issue is it simply comes down to this. We have to accept the way or that the world is a different place and that violence finds its way into every aspect of our lives, and we have to be ready to deal with it if and when it presents itself. Instead of putting our head in the sand and hoping it never happens, we're preparing for the realities that it might happen, and when it does, we're going to have an aggressive, decisive response for those sorts of things. And all you have to do is turn on the news on a weekly basis and you'll see situations that have occurred around the country. And I talk about mental preparation in that it's not a difficult thing. People say, well, how do you prepare yourself for this? And I say, just turn on the news and start paying attention and then start thinking about, instead of taking the attitude, gosh, I hope that never happens here, what am I going to do if and when it happens in my church or in my school or in my location, any place I might be? And that's the more rational approach, and that helps you develop a mental toughness that will help you get through some of those other issues. And even before that, relative to mental preparation, you have to understand that, particularly in the church setting, there's a difference between murder and killing. Murder for the unjustified taking another life versus killing for the greater good to protect innocent people from predators, and there are predators out there. And can we reach all of them on a verbal level? No, we can't. There's just some people who they're going to engage in deadly behavior, and the only way we're going to be able to do that is use deadly force to offset their deadly shooting spree in the case of most of the incidents that have occurred around the country. And, you know, when we talk about the way we teach, whether it's a security group at a church or other people, they're just looking at, you know, from a personal standpoint, the bottom line is we tell them they've got to come to grips with some of those issues before they even decide to get involved. Now, as far as how you, Lynn, as the pastor of the congregation are going to be involved, I think you need to be right in the middle of it. The fact that you've called this show and that you've already started talking about that tells me you're way ahead of the power curve. Some of the other people are still putting their heads in the sand and saying, gosh, I hope it never happens here. And basically what they're saying is we'll clean up the mess afterward and hope that it's minimized, but we're not going to take any aggressive measures to mitigate against any violence in our community.
And frankly, we all hope that it won't happen, but we have to recognize that it can.
Yes, it's a real world.
It really is.
Right, so I would encourage you, sir, if you want to get a hold of us, drop us a line at radio@sim-trainer.com, or if you want to call down to the shop at 293-3914 and ask for Jeff or Mark, we'd be more than glad to sit down with you and customize a program for your staff, just as we have several others who, and matter of fact, there's one that's still currently in the process. They had a first wave go through about a year ago, and just this past week, interestingly enough, they had the second wave come through training. So they're expanding their staff because of the number of services they offer to make sure they have adequate coverage.
Yes.
You know, we help them set up a response protocol so that if something happens, they have a very simplistic and inexpensive microphone system where they can indicate that, you know, something's going on at a particular location, and then they've got people that respond to handle that, and then they have people that respond to take care of the rest of the congregation. So
everybody has their assigned task, and having a plan is the key to really being successful in ending a situation like this.
Lynn, I don't want to talk in detail because I really don't want the protocols that we recommend to go out over the air, so that's something we would discuss in private, and I'd be more than glad to help you with it, and you'd be sure to get a hold of us.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out to Bob in Springfield, who has a question. Bob, welcome to the show.
I have a permit to carry in Ohio and in Florida, and kind of know what's required there, but as I travel through states to get there, from here to there, how can I find out what the requirements are for those states that I travel through?
There are several websites that have some pretty good information. If you go to the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action, that's the NRAILA.org website. And I'll put these links up on our webpage after the show. In fact, NRAILA website is already linked to our page in an earlier show. But I'll put new links up for the current show, and you'll be able to find them real easily after the notes get up for today's show. But the Institute for Legislative Action has a section on gun laws, and it's up in their top menu. So if you click on that, it'll give you a quick summary of the gun laws in each of the different states. There's a map, and you can click on the map to get to the particular state that you're planning to go through. And then there's also handgunlaw.us is a place that you can go to get information. The United States Concealed Carry Association, usconcealedcarry.com, is a subscription site, but it has very good information and maps that show you which states recognize your licenses from which other states, whether they're resident or not. Are you an Ohio resident, I assume?
Yes.
Okay. So you have a non-resident license from Florida?
Yeah.
Okay.
I filled that out when I went to my course.
Okay. All right. And so there are some states that will recognize your non-resident Florida license that won't recognize your Ohio license, and all that information is available on those websites.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show. Let's go out to Ray in Cleveland, who has a question for us. Ray, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Found you guys by accident and trying to catch up. It's a great show.
Well, thanks very much, and thanks for calling. I know you're not listening on the air. You must be listening online.
Believe it or not, I was streaming radio.
Perfect.
Over 1290,
yep.
And I listen to you guys all the time on iTunes.
All right, excellent. Thank you very much. How can we help you?
This kind of gets tied together. My son and I both have concealed carry weapons.
Okay.
I'm interested in the Glock, the fourth generation.
Okay.
The problem is I've heard a lot about the spring problem.
A spring problem?
The firing pin spring, I guess, or something. Have you guys heard anything about that? Or?
Well, when you say a lot, I've heard people have expressed some concern, and again, we don't know what the cause of that was. Some people could associate a spring problem or a firing pin problem, that it could actually be an ammo problem. There's a lot of things behind it, and I assure you this, if you have a problem with any gun you buy from Glock, you notify Glock, they're going to take care of that problem. And if it's an issue that is widespread, it would be well published in all the information, because Glock is one of, if not the most responsive firearm manufacturers in the world. The only thing I'll tell you about Generation 4, it's their new product. My personal opinion is it's no better than Generation 3. There's some different aspects of it. It has a little bit different feel, a little bit different look, but a Glock is a Glock is a Glock. It functions like a Glock, and that's what's made Glock so popular. Whether you're shooting a 9mm, a 45, a 40, a Glock is a Glock is a Glock, and it's high quality, very high standards. But rather than listen to a lot of the blogs or pay attention to that, unless they've issued an official notation issued from Glock or some other reputable source, I wouldn't get too wrapped up in it, because we've not heard that other than a few people mentioning things. But what we found in many cases, people attribute the problem to the gun, and it's either a shooting error or an ammunition issue. We just had it happen in our class. There were two guns that we were having problems with, and I'm certain that one of them, it was more ammo than the gun, although the gun is in question also. But those kinds of issues come up all the time. But as far as Glock 4th generation, if you've got any specific concerns, I'd call Glock directly. They will gladly, in their customer service section, they will have somebody talk you through any problems you might be having that you've heard about, and they will make it right one way or another.
Okay, great. Tying along, I don't know if you guys have carried it. Unfortunately, I haven't listened to all your shows yet. Looking at a .22 pistol for training because of the cheapness of the ammo.
Okay.
Looking at the Smith & Wesson, the .22A, have you guys heard anything about the reliability of that? How is that for a training weapon?
Again, for a training weapon, the .22s are fine. The thing I want you to look at, though, is all the major model .22s, whether it's Smith & Wesson, Ruger, Buckmark, Browning Buckmark, they're all good. The thing you might consider, if it's an ammo issue, you might consider getting you mentioned Glock. Glock sells a conversion kit, which consists of a slide, a barrel, and a spring that goes on top of your 19 or your 27 model Glock, and then you can shoot 22 ammunition all day long. And the nice thing about that is you will get the same identical functional operation out of that as you're getting currently out of your regular caliber gun.
Exactly, and the same grip, exactly the same trigger, because it's your trigger.
And you're looking at a cost of about between $299 and $349, but that's a lifelong investment. We've had one down at the range for almost 2 years now, and it just keeps shooting, and no problems, no malfunctions. So I say you got one of two choices. The difference or the disadvantage to going to the Ruger or the Smith & Wesson or the Buckmark is you're not going to get the same feel, but if it's an issue just of practicing basic marksmanship, that's going to be fine. If you want to carry it a step further and get, you know, it comes down to good, better, or best, I'm going to say the link between good and better is to go to the conversion.
Okay, because my son is looking at the Smith & Wesson M&P, and I was just thinking, is the Smith & Wesson .22 similar to the M&P?
No,
it's completely different.
It's completely different functional operation and mechanical operation.
Okay, so you're thinking, look at it for .22, there's no difference between the Smiths, the Ruger, the Brownings?
Not significant difference. They're all excellent, and they're just, I mean, they're each different. They're each unique in their own way, but they're all great guns, and they all do a great job for the purpose of getting some time behind a gun and working on the fundamentals, and that's the real benefit of the .22.
The other thing that I've heard, and I apologize.
We got to take
a barrel on a .22.
Okay.
Is that
really
necessary? Or
we'll answer that question after our break, because we need to take a break. But thanks for calling the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro. We're going to take our last break for the hour. We'll be back after the paying a few bills. This is, you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Thank you, Uncle Ted. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro on Shooting from the Hip. And let's go back out to the phones, and we'll talk to Jeff in Dayton, who has a comment for us. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Well, yeah, comment and question, actually. Have you heard of or read the book called Shooting Back, The Right and Duty of Self-Defense by Charles Van Vick?
I have not read that book, but yes, I have heard of it, and it's basically about church shootings and some of the responses to that sort of thing.
Well, actually, it was the author. He was in church back in Cape Town in 1993, and some terrorists stormed in with automatics and grenades with nails soldered on the side and just started terrorizing and killing members of his congregation. He chased them back out with a .38, and, you know, he wrote about it and in this book. And he happens, interestingly enough, to have moved stateside. He's in the D.C. area. He'd be a good interview.
All right. We'll see if we can find him. That's an interesting idea. What is your question? How can we help you?
Oh, basically, I just wanted to ask if you had heard of the book and the man.
Okay, yeah, I have heard, and of course there have been several other situations where people have been, there have been shootings in churches, and probably one of the more famous that was stopped by one of the church members was at the New Life Center in Colorado Springs in December of 2007, where, you know, that could have been a very much worse situation, and they had a security team, they had a situation that they had planned out what their responses would be, and it was one of the members who had was on duty at that moment as one of the security team, and she was armed and stopped the threat at that point. So, yeah, that's something that happens, unfortunately, all too often. It's something that often we like to think of as not something that should happen in church, and actually we're right about that. It should not happen, but unfortunately there's a lot of things that should not happen that do, and that's one of them, and we need to be prepared for that.
Yeah, the thing is, the reason I thought about it is, you know, you had that pastor on earlier in the hour, and sadly, you know, that pastor, he's a rare case. You know, it seems most pastors, you know, are not too friendly to the notion of firearms within their church.
Well, I'll tell you, that is changing. My own pastor approached me one time and asked me about how I felt about it, and when I explained my reasoning, he said, that's sound reasoning, and he obviously still had an opinion, I think, that was a little bit against it, but as times have evolved, and, you know, bottom line is, what we do at Sim Trainer and what I've always tried to do as an individual is bring to a level of conscious awareness the serious concerns about what's going on in the world around us, and then we can prepare for appropriate responses, and that's the big thing. I think changing the orientation is the way we have to do things, and the world's pretty much dictating that.
Yeah.
And it's no longer okay to just sit back and let things unfold. We have to take more aggressive action to respond, to initially avoid. Some of the things we teach has to do with detection and initial avoidance, and then other is decisive engagement. And we decisively intervene and take care of the problem. But the world's changing and the response is changing, and it's shows like this, comments like you, the book the gentleman wrote that you referred to, that's going to help us move in that direction.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your call. You know, he brings up so many issues in the pastor earlier today. We could devote an entire show just to those, but I want any of the listeners out there who have concern or an interest in that area to approach your pastor and talk about the issues. Obviously, it would be best if you take it outside of the normal activities, maybe during the week. Make an appointment to go see him and let him know about some of the things you've heard. I'd encourage you to research some of the events that have happened around the country, and know this. Like I've mentioned so many times, it's not law enforcement response that typically ends those. It's the heroic, spontaneous acts of people who are on the scene that bring to successful resolution many of those spontaneous acts of extreme violence. And what we know from intelligence, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know this, is that bad guys, whether they have terrorist intentions or just bad guys who want to, you know, wreak havoc on society, they're going to look to target-rich environments like churches and schools and other places where there's innocent victims who they can prey upon, and that's just how it is. I want to wrap up the show. First, I want to thank all the callers. It was a lively dialogue, but I want to wrap up the show today by mentioning that I want to encourage all the friends and family members and brother and sister law enforcement officers and teachers of Sergeant Doley's children and others who are involved and who know about what happened to just let Brian's enthusiasms, his ideals, his zest for life, and other strength that you saw in him be the motivation and the strength to help carry you through these tough times. The next couple weeks are going to be tough, but just keep him in your prayers and your thoughts, and we'll see you next week on Shooting From the Hip. This is Jeff Pedro and Mark Avery. Mark, you want to close?
Yeah, stay tuned for Bob Wolf and Gloria Shanahan on There Is a Season right after the news at the top of the hour. with Bill Scheidel. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. See you next week on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.